Well, hey, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Journey of Hope. Glad you could be with us today. The Journey of Hope is a podcast that's especially designed to address the issues that men and women face after incarceration. Special guest today, Renaud Purefoy. Renaud has several books out. We're going to be talking about his book on anger today, Anger Taming the Beast, something I think we could all use a little bit of help with. We'll be back with Renaud right after this. I'm Rodney Mathers, and you're on the Journey of Hope. Hey, y'all, love to hear from you. Remember, you can always catch me at mathersrodney@yahoo.com. That's mathersrodney @yahoo.com. Drop me a line. Hey, everybody, and welcome back. My guest today is Renaud Purefoy, and he's got several books out there on anxiety, phobias, panic, and today we're going to discuss his book, Anger, Taming the Beast, something that we could probably all use a little bit of help with. Welcome to the Journey of Hope, sir.
Well, thank you. Glad to be here.
Okay. Can we start off with just learning a little bit about you? Kind of a little tradition here on the Journey of Hope. We like to start off with people telling us a little bit about themselves.
Okay. Well, I was 20 years as a marriage family therapist. Actually, before that, I spent a few years teaching, about 5 years, was over in Japan. I had met my wife, who's Asian, and so she's Japanese ancestry, so we figured, let's go over there for a couple years, and that was fun. Came back, got my master's in counseling, worked with anxiety disorders for 20 years, and 20 years of anxiety and trauma, kind of, I was ready to move on to something else.
Okay.
And so I taught at a local school, college, for about 15 years, and now I'm retired from that, and I'm writing and talking and teaching, still doing a little bit of counseling as a pastoral counselor. I got my minister's degree about a year ago.
Great.
A credential, I should say.
Okay.
That's kind of my background.
Okay. Well, let's zero in on anger now. I guess a good place to start would be, I guess, do we know a good definition of anger? What is anger?
Yes. Anger is essentially one of two responses we have to threat. The other one is fear. And if the threat is perceived as something we can manage, then we'll go to anger. And if it's going to be something unmanageable, we'll tend to go to fear. And, of course, sometimes we can vacillate between the two. Simple example would be if there's a little, you know, chihuahua or something barking at you, you know, you're going, "Arr, get away from me," you know.
Right.
And if it's a grizzly bear, you're going to head the other way.
Right. I've always heard that anger comes from fear, and obviously there's you know, there's a good side to anger. I mean, it's how we can defend ourselves, right? But
well, and more so than that, when I use the word anger, it's a little bit different, because usually we think of anger as a fairly high level of this emotion, but really, whenever you assert yourself, whenever you're irritated or bugged by something, or you say, you know, "Get off my feet, you're stepping on them," that's really low level anger that's driving that behavior. Because, again, that's a threat, right?
Right.
And so when anger is a positive force in your life, it's driving actions. In fact, I talk about appropriate and inappropriate anger. If anger is reducing the threat with the least amount of harm to yourself and others, then I would say that's appropriate.
Okay.
It's when it's at too high of a level or it's creating harm in yourself or others that it becomes real inappropriate.
Well, there are a lot of people that end up in prison because of well, not because of anger, but their lack of ability to control it
properly.
Or to manage it properly. And my understanding is that stress also plays a role in anger. Something we talk a lot about here on the Journey of Hope is stress. What role does stress play in anger?
Well, your body is a machine, okay? And a lot of times we don't think of that. In fact, in our culture, a lot of times people have this myth that, you know, I don't care how tired I am, I can make myself function at 100% if I really will myself to. And we get that from watching these movies where the guy's been thrown out of the airplane and run over and beat up, and he's still chugging along, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the reality is when you're sick, hungry, tired, stressed out, your brain does not function the way it normally does. And so what that causes is you see things more black and white. And because of that black and white thinking, little things can become easily exaggerated into major things. In fact, just think about times when you were tired or sick. You know, things that normally don't bug you now become big issues.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the basic relationship between stress and anger. It's just, it's interfering with your ability to reason and think properly.
Do you address how to work with the stressors in your book?
I have a section on stress management, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting because a lot of your stress, well, let me back up. All stress is the triggering of the fight or flight response.
Okay.
You know, people give these kind of vague definitions of stress, but really, bottom line is your fight or flight response is being triggered. Now, when, and that's why they sometimes talk about good stress and bad stress. You know, if I'm on the basketball court, you know, that's stress, but it's good stress.
Mm-hmm.
Stress where I'm being triggered because there's, you know, pressures or deadlines or internal demands that I'm making on myself, that can be negative stress. In fact, that's the source of stress that you have the most control over, the stuff that's coming from inside.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times you can't do anything about the deadline. You know, it's just there. Or if you're at work and your boss is demanding you to do things in a certain way in a certain time frame, that's external stress. You know, and you can sometimes do some things about that, but your response to it internally is where you really have the most control. And that's what I tend to focus on in the book.
And it seems to me that there's, for a lot of this audience, me included, there's a lot of, like, little things that build. It may be money problems, job search, relationship issues. And do those things play into one's ability to, or inability to control their anger if they're not properly dealing with those stressors?
Exactly. In fact, let me back up one step, because a lot of people, especially, oops, I just lost my headset there. A lot of people come from backgrounds, you know, that were difficult. You know, mm-hmm. they either did not have parents, they had parents that were abusive in some way, or things of that nature.
Right.
And so they learn basically to suppress a lot of their feelings, because it's not, you know, it's dangerous to have them. And
right.
so they tend to either function at 0 or 100 with not a whole lot in between. We say they have difficulty modulating their emotions. It's either all on or all off. And a lot of times, part of what needs to be done is kind of reconnecting that whole emotional network. You know, what's really going on? Soft feelings such as being hurt, you know, or feared, those might be taboo. I can't feel those. And so when they come up, I cover them up with anger. Because, and that's a very common thing we do. You know, let's say I'm working on a car, right? And I got a piece left over when I'm done. And in my mind, I'm supposed to know what I'm supposed to be doing. Okay, enter the wife or kid, right? And, hey, how's it going, Dad? I get angry. Because inside, I'm feeling inadequate. I'm feeling like, you know, I should know what I'm doing, but I don't. And that's not okay to feel. So I become angry, because when I'm angry, I feel strong. You know, I got that adrenaline going through my body. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm tough and I'm strong. It's very ineffective. It's not doing anything good.
Right.
But at least I feel
right.
strong. And that's a very common response for people who have areas of their life that they're kind of out of touch with. So sometimes it's a matter of reconnecting with some of those areas and making them okay again.
And I guess maybe fear from people finding out what you're really thinking. I guess that could be part of it. I mean, you don't want your child who sees that piece left over to think, oh, man, Dad didn't really know how to do this anyway, you know? So,
but see, that's exactly the point. It's okay
right.
to say, well, it looks like Dad screwed up here.
Right.
Yeah, and modeling that for your kid. So it's okay for your kid to admit when they don't know. And that's that thing. If you can learn to own those feelings and to be okay with them, then that's going to prevent some of that inappropriate anger that comes up.
So specifically, how would you deal with that in that situation? Should you tell the child that, you know, you don't know why you had a piece left over? I mean, what would be the specific way to deal with that?
Well, exactly. It's just what you said. I mean, hey, it looks like I got a piece left over. I wonder where that came from. I want to have to figure out where this thing came from. Maybe I need to ask for help, you know, from my neighbor over there who knows mechanics.
Let's talk.
You know, this idea that I can't be weak, you know, I always have to be strong, I always have to be in control, that's a real common trigger for anger.
Control. There's a word.
Yeah.
There's a word. And so do you find that people that have issues with control also have anger issues as well?
Well, of course, because whenever anything threatens that control, that's a threat, right?
Right.
And anger is a response to a threat.
Mm-hmm.
So any of those types of things, if I'm helpless, confused, you know, out of control, you know, I'm not supposed to have those things. So
right.
Whenever I find myself in those situations, then I'm going to see a threat, and I'm going to respond with anger.
It seems to me that anger can also be like this, I don't know, a physiological type thing. And I think we've probably all, even the most mild-mannered of us, have experienced a time where we've gotten so mad that we've, you know, we cross this line where we lose control. What happens there at that line? What happens when people cross over into that? Maybe they know that what they're doing, their outward behavior is wrong or whatever, but they just can't stop it. What happens when people cross that line?
It's, you know, some people actually don't do that. Unless they're extremely stressed, and so they're not thinking clearly.
Okay.
And that's probably the biggest cause for that to happen, is the thinking is so impaired because of stress that they're just exaggerating things out of line.
Okay.
But a lot of how you respond when you're angry is childhood training.
Okay.
It goes back to the things that were modeled for you, the things that you had to do to survive, you know, within your peer group or your family or whatever. And those become real automatic behaviors. One of the things for people with a short fuse that becomes super, super important is they need to learn to take timeouts. The hardest thing for them is to learn that when I start to get angry, the first thing I got to do is just, you know, if I have to remove myself, but nothing's good going to happen at this point in time until I calm down.
Mm-hmm.
People who manage anger well, one of the things that you'll see them do when they start to get angry is they'll pause for a moment, you know, and they'll kind of dampen that down and then kind of take a look at, okay, what's going on here?
The old count to 10, huh?
Exactly. I mean, you know, when you work with people, you know, like couples where one's real explosive, the first thing you lock into place is a walkaway strategy, you know, and you say, okay, and you have them rehearse it, you know, you tell them, you know, I'm getting angry, I need to take a break. And they go away, and that has to be okay, of course, with a mate as well. But that walkaway strategy gives them a time to calm down and decide what's really going on. Why am I getting so angry? Is it real, or is it just, you know, some irrational thing going on inside of my head? If it's real, what do I do about it? And if it's irrational, where is that coming from?
The audience here, and once again, including me, has issues probably with anger, and probably if they ever let it get the best of them again, are going to spend some time in prison because they've already been there. So serious stuff here. And one of the things that I'm just going to use myself as an example here is it doesn't necessarily have to be for me like a conflict with someone, a physical conflict in terms of, you know, a discussion, or I can just be ruminating on a thought and piss myself off about something.
Right.
How common is that? How common is that? And how do we stop that thought process? And how do we keep from ruminating ourselves into a tizzy?
Yeah, well, there's two parts of that, the short term and the long term.
Okay.
I mean, long term, a lot of times that's going on because you've got some important needs that are not being taken care of.
Okay.
I mean, one of the big ones is intimacy. A lot of people with anger issues, they have a real hard time with intimacy. And okay. A lot of times they have, coded message that their mate will give them that they're interpreting totally wrong, but... it will cause them to start to ruminate because that intimacy is not being taken care of, relationship stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And again, that goes back to a lot of times childhood stuff where the person really didn't have that growing up in a healthy way. And so they've got some real unhealthy ways of connecting with people. Short term is, I think, without being really specific into a situation, because everyone's going to be a little bit different, is
right.
Okay. If I'm ruminating over something, what's going on? And 9 times out of 10, it's going to be a should-must rule that's being violated. It's the way things should be, but they're not that way.
Okay.
And should-must thinking, this rigid black-and-white thinking that people do, is again, a very common source of anger. I have expectations about who I should be and the way other people should be and how we should interact. And when you violate those rules, then you need to be punished.
Mm-hmm. I can literally think. Yeah. Well, I can literally think about things that happened 15 years ago, and if I let myself just ruminate on it, I can. I mean, which is absolutely. I know it's ridiculous, but I can get angry thinking about that situation from 15 years ago. Okay. Yeah. Let's talk
a little. And that's where maybe you need to process through that at a time. Not when you're home, fired up. But say, okay, this is an issue that happened in the past, and and some of it, quite frankly, is a spiritual issue. I
right.
need to figure out how can I let that go. What do I need to do? Depending upon your spiritual background, you may need to talk to somebody about that and say, this is something that's still in me, and I need to process through that.
One of the things you do in the book is you talk about how to find a therapist, and you talk about how to find a group that you can plug into. Can we talk about that for a second? Let's talk about Go ahead.
Yeah, nowadays the internet's the way to go.
Okay.
Not everybody. You either got a computer somewhere that you're available, or you got your smartphone, and basically just go on and do a internet search for anger management. And what really works well is you put that in quotation marks, and then on outside you put your city. And if you're in a small little city, you might need to start there, or then go to maybe something larger that's near you. What the quotation marks does is, it's like when I'm looking for music to play and I want to know the chords for a song, I'll put the song title in quotation marks and then the word chords on the outside. And so the internet's going to first look for that song title, then it's going to look for chords. So in the same way, if you put anger management in quotation marks, it'll first look for that, and then it'll look for that in relationship to your city. And that's the first place to start.
Okay.
And usually you'll find either groups and or people who specialize in working with anger management issues. And
mm-hmm.
a lot of times they will have groups that they sponsor or know about. The other place, of course, is if you have a local mental health association, they usually have a list of self-help groups in your area.
Great. Okay. Let's do one little specific thing here. Let's talk about...
One other one. It would be women's shelters. A lot of times they'll have anger management lists, too.
Shelters? Women's shelters or...
Women's shelters. Like in our area,
right.
We have one called Weave. So.
Okay, good. Well, the kind of support we look for from this show are things that don't cost money. I think that the groups, as opposed to a private therapist, would probably be the better way to go. But
but a lot of times they will know some of the self-help groups in the area.
Yes,
working with a guy with anger management... He's going to, and if they're available, he's going to want to plug them into some groups. Just like, somebody working with alcoholism wants to plug them
right.
into AA.
Right. And I'll tell you something else. Your book, I have not read your book. I've perused through it. It looks very, very good. And I would recommend it. We'll talk more about that in a second. Okay, let's take a specific situation. You're driving down the road. Somebody flips you off. You flip them off. You shouldn't have done that. But here you are in the pullover. And so conflict resolution. What do we do in that situation to de-escalate? Give us some tips.
You're both pulling over?
Yeah. I'm trying to get an example where two people are about to go to fist. How do we, whatever fantasy you want to make up there, it doesn't matter. But help
us. You have to plan beforehand.
Okay. Step one.
And if that's something you've done in the past, or if that's been a pattern for you, I mean, driving is a very common place where people escalate their anger because it's just kind of a unique place where people are, and they feel protected in their car and stuff.
Right.
And so part of what you need is look at things like that you've done in the past, and you need to, while you're rational and calm, sit down and think through them. So what's going on there? Okay, I flipped off. What's my thought process? You know, what are the beliefs and what am I thinking when that happens? And you need to start interjecting some what we call rational self-talk, or okay, this guy flipped me off. Okay, so why is that a big deal?
Right.
You know, one of the things that I learned a long time ago that really helped me is that most adults are just big kids.
Yes.
If a 2-year-old flips you off, are you going to get all angry?
Absolutely not.
But when an adult does it, who's supposed to act like an adult and respect me and all that other type of stuff, then I'm going to get fired up.
Right.
So part of it is kind of taking a look at people and situations and starting to reevaluate them. Is that really that important for me? What's the big deal about somebody that I'm never going to see again who thinks poorly of me?
Right.
You know, and it's a thought process you go through, and then you boil it down to some things you can say to yourself that means that are important, that are meaningful to you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so when you're in those situations, you have them. And if you do this a lot, then you might even want to, for a week or two, just kind of look at your cards or your self-talk that you've kind of written out or thought of and say, okay, when I'm in that situation, I need to remember that, hey, I'm driving. You know, these bozos around me, I'm not going to see them again. They're not important. They're not worth me risking incarceration.
Yes,
my life,
the
car,
consequence.
My family, everything else.
Yeah,
you know, and getting that belief system so imbued in you that when that starts to happen, those thoughts will start to come to you. The problem is people will have an experience, and then afterwards they'll say, man, I should have done something different.
Yeah.
But then they never think about what they should have done different. And therefore, they just do the same thing over and over again.
So thinking about
part
it beforehand.
Of the process, thinking about it and being very clear about what I'm going to think, how am I going to respond, and
right.
Rehearsing that in your mind.
Excellent. So I really like that.
Behavior.
I really like that. And we're getting close on time here, Renaud, but I just wanted you to address a situation like that, and here's the reason why. When people are in prison, you talk about maybe some good anger sometimes. Sometimes you have to, in prison, assert yourself in such a way that people don't take advantage of you. And so, all of these things that we talk about maybe as being irrational on the streets of the suburbs, things like respect and, that sort of thing, that seem kind of ridiculous. If you live in the suburbs, they're not ridiculous in prison because you need those things.
Well, I understand that's survival skills.
It is. And so what I find with myself and with this audience is that there has to be a time where you have to deprogram yourself from that kind of impulsive kind of anger, and that's why a show like this is so important, and why we get an example on how to de-escalate. I wish we had more time. Yeah, go ahead.
And just let me say, a lot of this is not just from prison. A lot of this is things that were survival prior to prison.
Okay.
Sometimes
yes.
As a young child, this is the way I survived in my family, and these were important skills. And sometimes I use the what's happening, what's real. What's happening is I'm using my skills from prison. I'm using my skills from childhood. What's real is I'm not in prison right now.
Right.
You know,
that's
and
exactly
really
right.
Making a distinction between, okay, I'm going back to my survival training, and that's not appropriate right now.
That's exactly right. Some guys come out and they just they can't stop talking the talk and walking the walk like they were in there, and they inevitably end up back in there. But if you're one of those people listening right now, I want you to check out Renaud Purefoy's book, Anger, Taming the Beast. And is there another way we can get in touch with you other than the book? Do you have a website, something like that?
Oh, yeah. Why Emotions is the easiest way.
Okay. And
whyemotions.com.
Okay, and we'll do that. I want to thank you so much for being on the Journey of Hope today. I wish we had more time. This is such an important subject. Renaud Purefoy. The book is called Anger, Taming the Beast. He has other books as well, all available on Amazon. I want to thank you so much for being on the show, sir.
And can I mention, too, that there are a number of YouTube videos I put up that cover a lot of these topics?
Please, how do we find them? How do we find them?
Just put my name into YouTube, Renaud Purefoy, or you can go to the website and it'll knock out over to
whyemotions.com. Excellent. Okay, we're going to take another quick break. We'll be right back. My name's Rodney Mathers, and you're on the Journey of Hope. Hey, y'all, my email address is mathersrodney@yahoo.com. If you've got an idea for a show, drop me a line and let me know what it is, and we'll try to get it on, okay? And I sure do like to hear from you. Come to the end of another Quad Podcast. I'd like to thank my special guest today, Renaud Purefoy, and remind you that if God is for you, who can be against you? We'll see you next time right here on the Journey of Hope.